Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a series interviewing growers, entrepreneurs, educators, and technologists who are inventing new solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges on the farm. Brought to you today by the Western Growers Association, supporting growers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com. Now here's your Voices of the Valley host, Director of Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology, Dennis Donahue.
This is Dennis Donahue, and welcome back to another edition of Voices of the Valley. And as is now a terrific routine, I'm joined by my good friend and partner, Candace Wilson. Candace?
Hello, how are you today? We're recording on a Friday. Yeah, I know it will air on a Tuesday, but I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, no, well, this should be an interesting conversation. It's on a Friday afternoon. Who knows what any of us are
doing. So,
as we were telling our guests before we got on the air, you know, typically you and I double team people. This time we're being double teamed back. We're excited to talk to Michael Ott, the founder of Rentizo, and learn about his move from the Midwest as he enters the Western Growers Network. But his service partner, if that's a fair way to phrase it, is Brianna Layfield, who is the president of AgBe. And really, I think in terms of starting the conversation, we actually want to start with you, Brianna, before we get to Michael, because you have such a history and so much experience with drones in California and in the specialty crop world. And I think that's an important place to start, because one of the things Candace and I try and do is really make sure we're getting information to our growers and listening audience. You know, there's been a lot of hype about drones, and, you know, it's peaked in interest and ebbed and flowed along the way. So why don't you give us some perspective and history of drones and where you think we are now, and then we'll toss it to Michael and talk about his entrance into our marketplace, if that works.
Yeah, that sounds great. So what we've seen over the last several years with drones in California is that, you know, 90% of our crops are specialty crops. So what we found is that the typical equipment that comes with a spray drone, which is a broadcast spray, is not exceptionally effective on a lot of our different crop types here, being where we're at in the center of Southern California wine country, dealing with corn, okra, almonds, you know, pistachios, all these specialty crops. The broadcast sprays are not working to the level that we felt was necessary in order to be effective on these crops. So what we've started doing is really focusing on the research side of these things, because I can't really expect that our growers are going to be content with my assurances that, yes, it's going to work. They really need to see those results. So that's been our target, is really providing that data, giving them the background, showing them, yes, this works as well or better as what you're currently using. And it has all of these benefits rolled into one small package through reduced emissions, reduced water usage, reduced root compaction, and then can do all of these various things that farmers may need multiple machines to achieve, which is the seeding, the spraying. You know, we do imaging with other drones in order to allow for spot spraying, so we're not using as much chemical. There's just so many possible avenues to utilize this technology. So I really believe this is where we are going to end up. This is where everything is going. It's just a matter of getting what we need to back those claims, what we need to show the farmers how this is going to benefit them in the specialty crop industry. And that's really our primary focus at this point.
Brianna, can you tell us, I'm curious, what then is the final product? What's the data analysis and handing off? What does the grower receive from you?
So what they're receiving from us, we're looking at coverage, because depending on what type of chemical they need to apply, whether it's pesticides, whether it's organics, fertilizers, pheromones, anything that they need applied, there's a certain level of coverage that any agronomist or farmer is going to tell you is acceptable. And that's what we typically target. So we do spectrometer analysis of our sprays through water-sensitive paper. We go and spray an area with our specialty booms with our drone, see what the coverage is like, make sure that it's equivalent or better to what they're already achieving. And then we can demonstrate, yes, this drone is going to apply the way you need it to apply. We're going to be able to provide all of these benefits to you as a specialty crop grower. And then that's the data that we're trying to amass now. So that's where we're lacking at this point, and that's what we're working on.
So is it fair to, from a specialty crop standpoint, you know, I've kind of lamely remarked over the years, you know, when we opened up the Innovation Center, you know, drones were, you know, kind of the glitzy product, and people thought the drones were the product, and the drones are the delivery vehicle for services such as spraying or analytics. Is it fair to essentially, from a specialty crop standpoint, to say that the two big buckets, so to speak, are services such as spraying and then analytics and whatever that might entail?
absolutely, Dennis. I think that the majority of people, because of the fact that specialty crops require more fine-tuning and more work, they've kind of thrown all of their drone bucket into the analytics. They've said, okay, well, we can use the imaging, and they've kind of just left it there. But there is such a huge potential for spraying specialty crops, especially given how many of them are in more difficult to reach areas. Their access is limited. Their resources are limited. You know how many of the areas in the Central Valley are water deficient, and we're in a statewide drought pretty much all the time. So these are all things that are going to really impact the specialty crop industry. It's just getting that information to them. So I think that's the next major step, is now implementing that spray technology. It definitely was there. I think it started initially and people were kind of underwhelmed by the results that they were getting from the stock drone. And then with the modifications and the changes, some provided by Rentizo, some done by us, that we were able to then say, okay, now look at what we can achieve. And that technology just keeps growing in leaps and bounds every year, every decade. If you think about where we were 10 years ago versus now, it's mind-boggling.
And as we bring Michael into the conversations, one of the things that I was struck by while we were visiting before we got on air is you talked about that there's really a community that surrounds drone activity. It's not, okay, here's a grower, there's a drone, and you get something. It's really a bigger conversation than that, it sounds like.
Well, it can be that limited, but if you want to utilize it and implement it in a way that allows precision agriculture to really shine, it's better to have all of these components, because it is a small world, really, in the scheme of things. You meet growers or you meet farmers, and they know this farmer and they know that farmer, and everybody kind of wants to collectively provide a better service for them. It's not something that you're just, you know, kind of hoarding all to yourself. If something can be improved, everybody wants to know about it. So I definitely feel like the amount of people that are kind of involved in the multifaceted drone industry with regards to agriculture, that those can be such a benefit when used all together. So yes, we can go out to a field and spray it. But if we have an imager who's coming out and evaluating it first, and then we're just spot spraying along with an agronomist, then we're getting an even better result with less product applied, and you're getting even more benefits that way. So, you know, it's kind of just implementing that precision agriculture in all of the ways that it can be implemented.
Well, Michael, I can figure out how you ended up with Brianna and Agby. I dare say she's pretty sharp. And, you know, we were kind of joking before you came on air. I'm not sure we really need you.
But, yeah.
Because she's terrific. But the reality is she likes to partner. She offers services. And I can certainly see how she ended up being part of the strategy of your business plan in terms of coming west. But take us back to the beginning, what you're doing. Because you've earned a great, in all seriousness, a great reputation, a lot of regard for what you've accomplished. And, you know, you're kind of one of those startups that your press beat you here and it's like, oh, okay, this is exciting. You know, they're making a move into our market. So there was some anticipation for the move because you really are well-regarded. But talk about your history and why you're now ready to come into the specialty crop world and obviously how you're proceeding and coming to market.
Yeah, and we believe in the systems approach, just like Brianna was talking about. You can't exist on your own. I'm not just a single drone sprayer doing something. You've got to have the whole network coming in. And it's for safe and legal spraying, you need the drone, you need training, insurance, permitting, a trailer, a tendering system so you can refill. All those things are required. And that's what we're offering at Rentizo, that true turnkey package. And we started off the company just doing a lot of customer discovery. So what does an ag retailer want? What does a farmer want? How can we design a system that really hits with their needs and we can all make money in the process? So our goal is to be very efficient in our application. So that's better for the farmer because they're buying the right amount of chemicals. We're not over applying. It's better for the ag retailer and crop consultant because they're maintaining that trusted advisor status where they're able to prescribe exactly what's needed. And then having an application system that honestly gets there when it's required every time. So if it rained, I know it's in California, you don't have that much rain, but when it's muddy field.
Yeah, don't tease us like that. That's not fair.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't do that.
But when there's a muddy field and you can't get there, or you've got labor problems and you don't have enough people, those are the type of things that we're solving for. And being able to do repeated applications from an autonomous drone, that the drone's flying itself, it's going in the exact same spot every time. You can go treat a field every 2 weeks for the same thing. If you need to continually spray for flies, if you got a fungicide issue, or you need to drop, you know, spreading is a big issue as well. We can do cover crop seeds. We can do granular fertilizers, all those little tweaks. That's what we're building. And then to get to your question about why we want to be in the West, there's a lot of opportunity there. And what we've learned in doing about 46,000 flights as a company, things that work and things that don't. And to be honest, we were like, oh, we're going to California in 2021. You know, we're ready. It's like, we weren't quite ready yet. We knew it. We saw it. We saw the opportunity. That hasn't changed, but the technology hasn't caught up. And now it has. We had a really nice announcement come out earlier this week that we actually tripled the size of our drone legally. So we're now using a 30-liter tank, a 7.5-gallon tank versus a 10-liter or 2.5-gallon tank. So that's a big thing that's enabling us to get out there and be more efficient, especially at the higher volumes that many specialty crop producers prefer.
I was going to ask you, the tank, what specific technology advancements were made? And really, it sounds like it's all around the tank size that enables that efficiency.
It is a regulatory barrier that we overcame. The technology has existed for a year. This same drone has flown 167 million acres in China last year. 167 million. Wow. And in the United States, there's been 3 acres flown legally. That's by us this week.
Congratulations. So, that's so cool.
You know, give or take 167 million acres, we're pretty close.
Yes. So
I presume I'm not supposed to ask you about acres flown illegally, right?
I can't speak about what anybody else is doing.
All right. Adam, hey, listen, you're from Iowa, so we know you guys play it right down the middle. So I'm sure everything's been on the up and up. But both of you have kind of prompted the question. In my mind, when you talk about specialty crops, you know, as Western growers, you know, we're thinking about vegetables, strawberries, but also the permanent crops, stone fruit, almonds, citrus, grapes, et cetera. Is your initial focus more on the permanent crops, the tree crops, that type of thing, as opposed to vegetables and strawberries?
Hey, Brianna has more experience than I do in this, so I'll be quick and then let her talk. We believe the tree crops permanent are going to be a bigger opportunity. A good example that we found is like a lot of almond trees are doing air blast spraying where they're getting the sides and bottom pretty well, and they don't have a way to treat the top, which in many instances is the oxygen producing portion. So we could be complementary to existing technologies and go out there, hit those spots that aren't currently hit very well, or get into a location where you just need a few trees in an entire orchard. That's a great, great opportunity for what we're doing.
Yeah, so we actually, in the grant proposal that we are trying to get through now, we're looking at strawberries, tomatoes, almonds, and grapes. We have treated almonds and pistachios previously that we got a lot of great results from, even actually all the way through the canopy, which was surprising to us. We didn't expect that. But there are so many almonds in California. There are so many pistachios, so many pomegranate trees, citrus, same thing. We are treating some citrus at Cal Poly Pomona, doing the top because they can't get those. So that is a conjunction thing where we're working with them together. I know that the T30 has a lot of possibility, which is very exciting. Right now with the stock, we can have up to a 20-foot boom, so we can treat bigger trees with our drones. But with the really dense foliage that you find in citrus and avocados, it's not quite as effective by itself. So those are things that, you know, again, you need kind of a group of people to find the most successful IPM for that specific grove, that specific crop. I mean, we kind of modify our booms based on what we're treating at that time, and we do it very specified to what's going to be the most effective. So we don't have a one-size-fits-all type of scenario with drones, and it's easy to modify. It's not something that you just have to kind of go with what you have, which is great. I mean, it also increases that factor of precision agriculture.
We did do a tomato application that was pretty interesting, where there was 20 inches of tomatoes and then 60 inches of bare ground, 20, 60, 20, 60, all the way down. So we actually modified the drone to put the drops exactly at the width of the tomato planting, which was all RTK, all super precise, and then measured the angle, measured the height, everything else. So we were getting a net 24-inch spray. So we had a 2-inch buffer on either side of those tomatoes. Takeaway is we did a bunch of math and physics to understand we're going to spray exactly down the rows, hit them with what they needed, and then we skipped 60 inches out of 80. So we actually reduced the overall application by 75%. Another cool thing that we could do with that specific job is they wanted a 2-gallon rate on a foliar fertilizer. We did that, but like when it gets to 80 degrees, we want it to go up to 2.5 gallons. So not only do we do all those things, adjusted everything perfectly, changed the rate midday when the temperature got to the certain spot. So that just tells you all of the different things that we can do to modify and be super precise for each individual application. We can do that for anything. It's just a matter of, do we have the people? Do we have the time? Do we have the market? And we're finding over and over again that this opportunity is there. So that's why Rantizo is going to California.
Very exciting. I'm curious, can you talk, if I'm a grower listening in today, talk to us just about the complete service that you offer. I pick up the phone and I call you and I say I'm interested. What happens next? Take us through all the way through the end of the flight.
When I get a call from a grower, what we initially ask for is the specific crop location. We need the growth patterns, the planting patterns, the row spacing, all the things that are specific to that plant. If we can get the Google Earth maps and the specific locations, that's ideal. So we do a full evaluation of their crop before we decide what we think would work best. If we're close enough, then we actually go out and do an evaluation with them as well and look at what's going to be the most effective for their specific crop type. And then if they have a prescription from an agronomist or they need to get their prescription, then we work with them on that. If they want the imaging, we have an imaging partner that we work with that can come out and image the crop. So we basically tailor it to exactly what they're looking for and what specifically what they want result-wise with their treatment. And then after we get all of the initial stuff done and we get all of the necessary components in place, we develop the boom for their project. We go out with our trailer, which has a closed mixing system per the California regulations. It has everything that we need. It holds 385 gallons of water. It has our drone, it has workspace, all that type of stuff. We go out, we set up at the site, we do the application rates that have been prescribed, we mix the chemical, go apply, and then we follow up with them after we're done with the application to ensure that we got the same results or, you know, better results than what they were seeing before with their previous treatment method.
One thing we're adding for the 22 season is going to be as applied maps. So you'll actually be able to see when you're out in the field, exactly where you were, what was applied. And then it's all time stamped and weather dependent. So you can say, okay, we were there 9:43 in the morning. It was 82 degrees. It was a 4 mile an hour wind, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something that we're rolling out for the 22 season. So we have those maps that are going to be exactly what was applied, when and where.
Michael, is one of the opportunities you have as you enter the game, and I assume is applied even in the Midwest, for instance, if let's say the drones were a tool just simply to provide analytics. You know, one of the things we hear from, you know, specialty crops, particularly on the smaller block size folks, hey, I'm going to walk the field anyway. I'd love to have the analytics, but the reality is that they're only worth this much to me because it's an incremental cost. Hit the number or not, we're fine either way, though I think people are wanting to get more information, et cetera. But is one of your advantages, because you're providing a service and a spray, growers are going to pay for services anyway if something has to be applied. So does that help with your, you know, kind of time to market and ability to build the company? You're not having to prove, you know, the economics may need to make some sense, but the reality is they're going to pay for a service anyway. It's just a question of who's going to apply it. Does that figure into your opportunity?
So we did 300 trials nationwide this year, spreading from California to New Jersey. And what we showed in all of those is application from a drone, at the very least, is equal to or better than a plane, a backpack, or a tractor. So we've proven that dozens and dozens of times, and I can show you stats in a wide range of crops and a wide range of applications, from fungicide to insecticide to a dry material, whatever it needs to be, that it's going to be the same. So that proves that out. And we'd like to work with more imagery companies, because I think you're right that people understand what's happening, but they aren't able to capture that value because there's not an execution system that aligns very well with the data that they're getting. So when I do an image of my field, pay a few dollars an acre or however much it is, if I'm just going to spray the whole field anyway, why did I do the image? Like, it doesn't make much sense. But when you've got a system that can come in and hit the top 3 acres, it can do something else differently on the 4 acres off to the side and then spray a different product in the middle. If that's what's needed, then you can start to justify those imagery costs. Whereas right now they kind of quantify a problem that you knew you had anyway. So just spray the whole thing. So that's where you can start to capture some of those benefits. And people are slowly but surely coming along to that.
And I'm just kind of thinking back. I haven't been, you know, running a company for a while. But so for instance, if I'm thinking about something like aphids, you know, in the old days in the summer, I'd initially would hear about a hotspot. So if you could isolate the hotspot for me, then we can target that. I'm not necessarily going to spray the whole field if we can go in and get the hotspot. I mean, that's the basic example. That's an example.
Exactly. And we have a great aphid example. So there's a greenhouse growing lettuce in the Midwest, and they bring in new soil every week. Every week that soil has an aphid problem. So what we do is bring out pre-hatched ant eggs. We actually spread it with a dry granular spreader and then drop those ant eggs inside the specific areas of the greenhouse where the new soil is. Ants hatch, eat the aphids, and solve that problem. It's an ongoing thing, so we do it every week. But that's the type of thing that we can solve. Like, okay, you know where your problem is. Let's go treat it right there. sometimes people just want to spray the whole thing, and we can do that too. Or you can be really efficient with your application.
You know, Michael, I must confess to being a Salinas Valley chauvinist. They should not be growing lettuce in Iowa. So, you know, you help us with our...
The agency. Thought crossed my mind too, Michael. Yeah, the thought crossed my mind. You may not speak about lettuce in Iowa.
don't do that.
I'm curious though. I just want a description. Give me a visual of what this drone looks like. And, you know, if you're flying in a greenhouse versus, you know, flying over an almond field, what kind of adjustments do you have to make?
So for us specifically, our drone, once it's fully extended, is about 4.5 feet in diameter. It has 8 rotors. And like Michael said, the MG1P has a 2.5 gallon tank. So it's not as big by any means as the T30. We just modify our drone spacing. So when we're flying over a grove and we need more coverage, we'll use the wider drone booms, 12 to 20 feet typically, to get that coverage. But when we're flying in the grapes, we don't use any horizontal booms. We use a vertical boom that goes straight down in between the rows, about 3.5 feet. So it lessens the footprint. So it's highly modifiable based on what specifically you're treating, and which is great. You do need clearance. If you're flying in a greenhouse, you definitely need the overhead clearance to be able to fly in there. If it's really tight, like one of the hoop tunnels, you're not going to be able to make it. So you would need a smaller, I know they do make some smaller drones for those types of applications, and I'm sure we'll see more of those, but they're not quite as efficient. We just modified based on what specifically the application is required.
Michael and I have had, you know, we chatted a little bit about, let's say, almond orchards and, you know, getting in under the canopy and, you know, some of the challenges that poses. So, you know, the question I have is, does that rely on what you were talking about at the beginning of our conversation in terms of making some technology adjustments? Or perhaps this is kind of a silly question, or are some drone pilots better than others? Is there a skill set that goes along with, you know, moving drones around?
They're definitely skill set. It is something that you need to have the training. Like Michael said, you need the training. If you don't have the training, you're not going to know what to do in certain scenarios. What we found, like, for example, with grapes, getting under that canopy, it wasn't feasible with the broadcast spray. It was not reaching the fruit. The fungicide was not getting to it at the level of coverage that was required in order to be effective. So that's why we developed specialty booms that would specifically drop down in between those rows and reach the fruit. Now, if you have an almond grove where it's old growth and you can't get in between the rows, then it's, you know, it's possible you'd have to come up with another option and start working in different ways. But like I said, being able to really modify what the drone can and can't do based on boom placement, nozzle placement, quantity of nozzles, amount of output, all of those things can be adjusted and really fine-tuned with our programs, with Rantizo's program, with our drone, with everything that we put on it to make it the most effective for that specific application.
Yeah, we've got a lot of video up on our Twitter feed, which is at Rantizo Sprays. You can also see just at the website, as soon as you click on rantizo.com, you'll see a drone flying over corn, and you can see the width that we have and everything else. So it's a 20-foot boom applying very precisely, but we can modify that. That's the fun thing for us is, what do I need for these pistachios? What do I need something different for these tomatoes? Okay, we can change that up. So that's a pretty exciting thing for us as we're looking at all the new opportunities that are popping up.
How far above the corn or the almonds? What's the distance between the top of the canopy and where the drone flies?
So we like to go around 4 feet above is kind of our minimum. That's for most sprays, that's the lowest that you could go. We can go higher from there. You'll get a little bit more drift the higher you go, obviously. Some of our dry applications will go as far as 20 feet above, because then you can get a full swath if you've got a dense cover crop seed, for example. But what we do, and I guess maybe to harken back to an earlier question, we actually don't want our drone pilots flying the craft. We want them setting it up where to go. And if set up properly, the drone will do almost all the work. I think Brianna is in a unique case where she's doing more manual flying than most, but the overwhelming majority of our times, we're actually letting the drones fly themselves. And when they do that, then we can swarm, so you can actually fly more than one at a time. And that's where your productivity really amps up. And it's pretty cool to see one drone take off with a big boom and everything else, but it's much, much cooler to see three, and they all go up all at the same time. Looks like kind of a Star Wars thing, and I'm a pretty big nerd, so that's a fun thing for me every time.
I was just going to say, we swarmed two earlier in the week with the river treating the water hyacinths, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's another fun opportunity that we did in California. So it was a canal completely overgrown with water hyacinths, and we took the drones out and flew them precisely above spraying so that we could knock those down, and had it all mapped out. And then we got another drone over the top. So we had, I think, three in the air at one time, with one flying to get videos of that. And so I've seen the raw footage, and once we have some results, we'll put that out. But it's pretty cool things going on.
This may be a very rookie question, but I'm so curious, what information or parameters do you load into the drone so that it knows where it's flying on the field, so you don't have a pilot?
Every pilot has to be able to program the drone effectively, because when you're training, either whether it's through your commercial Part 107 or what's required in California, you have to know what to do when something goes wrong. So of course you hope everything goes right, but if something goes wrong, you have to know exactly how to treat that situation specifically so that there's minimal damage, not only to the drone, but to the crops, to anything else. So you're always looking for any possible pitfalls. You have visual observers that are looking at what's going on as well to give you information. So when you're programming into your drone, you're taking all of the edges of your field, whatever you're deciding to treat, you're setting key waypoints to make sure that the drone knows everything that it's supposed to hit. And then you set buffers and you set flight paths. So it forms essentially a grid of where it flies back and forth. It doesn't spray in between. And then when you have to reload, it goes back to that precise spot where it stopped and starts again. So it's very effective in the sense that once you map all of that out once, you have that map for the remainder of the time that you're ever going to treat that field, which is really helpful. So we do fly manually when required, but we also prefer to set up a map and set up a plan, because it ends up being easier in the long run if we end up treating there again.
And we've done a lot of work with imagery providers and other data providers to be able to pull in shape files. So if you have a shape file of your field, sometimes your mapping exercise takes about 40 seconds because you just literally pull that in and you're ready to go. You usually have to confirm that that's right, that there hasn't been any GPS drift or anything else, but we can make that really easy for you. And that's one of our things as we get more and more fields in our system. Like I mentioned, we've done 46,000 flights, and there's a whole heck of a lot of territory we have covered, but there's more that we haven't. And the more that we get, the faster it is each time as you do that repeat application over and over and over again.
What is the speed? So like how many acres can you cover in an hour?
So there's multiple answers to this. So in a flat field, spraying at a 3-gallon rate, will cover about 14 acres an hour. And that's your true coverage. So if you're spraying 14 out of 100 acres that need to be applied, I could argue I just covered 100 hours in that acre. Some people would argue with that. That may not be super accurate, but it is what you needed to spray, and it depends on the severity of your problem. If you have a more difficult area to treat, say you're going in a vineyard where you're going to be flying slower because you're going up and down terrain, that will impact your coverage. So you may go down to 10, you may go down to 5, depending how hard it is, just to see from there. And then also remember, with our swarming system, you can have multiple drones going at once. So you can multiply that, not necessarily times 2, times 3, because there's some imperfect overlap, but maybe times 1.8, 2.7 or so. So you can get pretty good coverage. And then with our larger system, we'll be going around, we believe, 20 to 30 acres an hour with the T30 system in a flat, easy to access area. Once again, every time it gets harder to go, it slows us down. And that's a thing that we've found. Typically, when people call to use the drone, they can't get there any other way. They don't have a tractor that's going to work. They don't want a backpack spray, whatever. And we always hear, oh, it's flat, it's easy to get to, for sure. And then we just get there and you can't even set the trailer up on a level spot. It's so tumultuous. So sometimes it's just like, well, this is not the flat area that you told us it was. So we got to make our accommodation there.
Question for you, and maybe shifting gears a little bit. Brianna and I, we were chatting a little bit about drones and regenerative agriculture. And, that's certainly a phrase we're hearing a lot. And, this precision spray opportunity, ability to do so, sounds like it contributes to that conversation. So a lot of our members, whether it's dealing with regulations or large customers that are now beginning to broaden the sustainability conversation to include other elements. This strikes me as technology that helps growers participate in that conversation say, look, this is something that really helps towards that objective, because everybody's not going to all of a sudden go, hey, we're not doing tillage on the West Coast. That ain't happening. So, yep. Can we find other alternative ways to say, but here's how we can contribute?
Yeah, two main things there is focusing on optimizing your input application. So you can be very precise. You can do repetitive applications, which will get to where you need to be in the field, potentially with less chemical and less fertilizer, which reduces runoff, reduces drift, reduces all those exposure problems. That's one big thing that we've proven out. The second thing that's pretty interesting is our ability to pollinate from the drone. So we've pollinated corn, which is by far the hardest thing to pollinate. And we realized, well, actually, there's a bigger and better opportunity in almonds that is much easier to pollinate. And there's some opportunities, especially in California, that we can knock out. So we're looking at doing some trials this year and then expanding from there. And that's a really fascinating opportunity for us, as you need to collect and spread pollen. You can do that very precisely, because the way it works now is bees are very temperamental if they're available at all. And if it's the right day for the tree, but say it's not warm enough, your bees aren't going to be very happy. You're not going to get as much pollination. What we can do is use the drone exactly when it's ready for the crop and take a lot of that variability out of it. So that's a big thing that we're really excited about.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Pollination independent of bees is an interesting conversation. I'll bet you that'll get the phone ringing a little bit.
I remember sitting at a PMA, the future of agriculture, something like that. And they were talking about robots harvesting in the field and, you know, little bees flying around. And this was like 10 years ago. And I remember thinking, this just sounds like such a wild world that like, this is way too extreme. And here we are with all of these new technologies emerging, and it really, it's here, it's happening. So it's so cool. And go back to some of Dennis's questions on sustainability and regulations and this sort of thing. Are you forging any specific relationships within the industry to help understand where the conversations on synthetic chemicals is going and how you can, you know, be part of that solution? Or is that kind of further down the road?
Absolutely. So we're working with many, if not all, of the big chemical companies to test what they have, see how it works with drones, look at low volume formulation, look at ways that we can improve their breeding, look at ways we can improve their testing, all those things. So that's a very active portion of our business. And I like to say we have a promiscuous partnering strategy. We want to get out there and work with as many people as possible, show them the benefits of the system, and then find the use cases that it works. I will completely acknowledge there's a lot of things we are not good at. There are some things that we're way better than anyone else. So that's where we want to be able to use those use cases, get out in the field, test it, prove that it works, and then expand from there.
You know, picking up on what Candace said, you know, in a former life when I was a mayor and you're thinking about expanding urban boundaries and, you know, and there's always kind of that historical dance, you know, all of a sudden there's development and then there's a school and the school's next to the fields and, you know, and the farmer's like, wait a minute, I was here first. You know, it's essentially you move next to an airport and you're complaining about jets land and make noise. So this issue of precision spraying, and I want to pick it up on Candace's point, does that preclude drift or at least allow our industry to have those conversations when they need to occur? You know, we can be precise, no more than necessary. So that's good. Are there other benefits that we should be aware of?
Oh, absolutely. Some of our earliest sales were to people that had farms right around cities, towns. This is exactly some of the early use cases that we've done. And Rantiso published a paper in the American Society of Agricultural Biological Engineers, ASABE, and we showed that there's much less drift measured downwind when the drone is spraying than when a tractor was applying. So we're able to show that we're spraying in exactly the right spots and then not drifting significantly from there, especially in relation to existing ground rigs.
Yeah, no, and I think that's an important element of technology. I mean, if it can be a force multiplier for multiple opportunities, whether it's targeting the input so your costs aren't any higher than they need to be, if you can deal with kind of some of these urban-rural boundary dust-ups, so to speak, those things should be discussed because they certainly matter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's where we want to talk to people. And one of the funnier calls that I got at the beginning of the company, it was fungicide season in Iowa. And they called and said, there's a plane spraying fungicide, you know, in the field next to me. There's 35 mile an hour winds. It just covered my house in fungicide. And I was like, I'm sorry for you, but like I don't own any planes. I'm not a plane company. Like you're talking to the wrong person. We for sure are not responsible for this. And like, well, what are you doing about it? I'm like, well, we're selling drone sprayers, we can be more precise. And also our contractors like Brianna are smart enough not to go apply in 35 mile an hour winds. But those are the type of things that you get the calls from people. And that one for sure was not our fault, but we're happy to be pleasant and redirect the conversation as appropriate.
Well, as we kind of close here, I want to, Brianna, anything we've missed or important points to bring out as people think about this, not so much new technology, but the fact that it's growing, it's expanding, we're going to see more of this, you know, and as Candace alluded to, we're always thinking about, you know, what's good information for the growers who are potentially everybody's customers here.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing we're trying to relate to growers is we want to provide you with the data. We want to show you how much more effective this is or how much better this will be in a variety of ways for your crop treatment. And we understand that you need something to back this up. So we're trying to listen to our growers. We're trying to make sure that they understand, yes, we know what the shortcomings are of each, you know, application type. We know what the drone addresses versus ground rigs versus crop dusters versus backpack sprayers or, you know, any other method that you have of applying. We want to find that niche for you and be most effective for you specifically. And so those are the things that it's like, don't be afraid to ask the questions. Don't be afraid to see what we can or can't do. We're more than happy to work with you and try to really find the best solution for your crop and your situation. And that's where I think a lot of growers just kind of shy away from it because they're unfamiliar with it or they may not realize what the capabilities are. But it's like, give us a chance to show you and you'll be surprised.
I just have to, it's so true. And you know, it's just such a great message for the growers to hear. It's not black and white. It is, and this is like with any new technology, it's about partnering and evolving it and building it together. And Michael, you talked about that too. But anyway, I just love that response.
Well, I think it's a good one, you know, and just the tail end of the lunch conversation I had, you know, someone was kind of asking, you know, about ag tech and what has everyone got to show for it? And one of the things I said is, well, a lot of what everyone's got to show for it, you don't see because, you know, everything's not a, you know, VC play and, you know, just good, solid companies making great progress. And, you know, Michael, I think kind of picking up on that idea of, you know, being open to new solutions, being open to technology, kind of bring us home with how long these things, you have an open mind, you've got to work together. You know, they don't happen overnight. Just the process of even if you have the technology, customer discovery, building relationships, it's just a process.
It is. And that's where we love finding partners. And that's one of our goals is just finding people on the West Coast that want to work with us and see that there's benefits to doing things in a smarter way. And I always talk about the value of not doing something. Like, what's the value of not spraying extra pesticide where you don't need it? If you've got 80 acres of something and you don't spray on 60. Well, obviously you're saving the chemical cost, but you're also saving that resistance that generates from overapplication. You're saving the drift, you're saving the runoff, you're saving the time and the labor. So there's a lot of value in not doing something. And that's hard to quantify at times. It's hard to capture, but people realize it. And that's where we want to be as precise as we need to be, not any more and not any less. So that's what the system with Rantiza will give you is that ability to be exactly where you need to go, when you need to be there, and just drop the right liquid or dry thing in exactly the right spot.
You know, I like to tell people, I think the role of the Innovation Center is to help people cross the finish line. And, you know, at least in our marketplace as you move west. But Candace, I think we can both agree, they've kind of got a running start on the finish line.
Absolutely. This is so neat. So exciting. What fabulous technology you guys are developing. And if a grower is interested, how should we be directing them?
So for me, check out rantizo.com. Find us on Twitter at Rantizo Sprays. We're also on Facebook. Those are the easiest ways. If you're a grower, you can put in a services request. If you want to be a contractor for us, similar to Brianna, there's a spot for that as well. And we love to find partners. That's one of our main goals in doing all this outreach. Brianna is awesome. And unfortunately, there's only one of her. We need many, many more people just like that. And I'm happy to get people linked up with her for all the great things that are happening out there.
And Brianna, tell us everyone how to get a hold of you and then make sure you stick out your territory. So, you know, everybody knows, you know, Temecula out 100 miles or whatever it is. Say, hey, yeah, we've got that covered for Rantizo. You know, if you want to talk to him in Modesto or something, feel free. But your claim.
Yeah. We go all over the state right now, so it's a lot bigger than 100 miles at this point. But they can reach us at ag-b.com is our website. We are also on Facebook under AgB. We're part of a lot of the drone societies and grower societies out here as well. So, you know, Brianna Layfield under AgB. I'm on LinkedIn and all those areas, so they can reach me any of those ways.
Terrific. Well, Candace, I think this is, you know, I was a little intimidated that it was 2-on-2, but I think it turned out pretty well. So
I love it.
Another good episode of Voices of the Valley. And we hope and know we'll see more of you two in the future. And we'll be back to our audience again next week. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Candace, thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Voices of the Valley podcast, brought to you today by Western Growers Association, supporting producers that grow the best medicine in the world. Find out more at WGA.com.